Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I am your host, Paul David, founder and CEO of Literal Humans. And I have the pleasure to be joined today by a longtime partner of Literal Humans, Shauna Young, CEO of Camelback Ventures. Welcome to the pod, Shauna.
Hey, you. I'm so happy to be here.
We're happy to have you. For context for our listeners, Camelback Ventures, I'm going to explain what they are in a second, but they do fantastic work in the social enterprise space. And they build ventures for entrepreneurs of color and women, and they invest in them. And we had the amazing pleasure of working on their website with them and working with many of their fellows over the past year. So this is a very, very special episode. And we get to talk about, helping underinvested entrepreneurs build equitable communities, because that's sort of the focus and one of the goals of Camelback. So thank you for your partnership and welcome, Shauna.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here with you.
Yeah. So for listeners who maybe haven't heard of Camelback Ventures before, they're tackling one of the biggest challenges in entrepreneurship. The fact that while genius is equally distributed, opportunity definitely is not. Camelback is a New Orleans-based organization that invests in entrepreneurs of color and women who are building ventures focused on social impact. Since 2015, they've invested over $9 million in more than 200-plus entrepreneurs, primarily from under-resourced communities. What makes their approach so special is that they also provide executive coaching, mentorship, and access to mission-driven networks through their flagship fellowship program. And we sit on the expert bench, so we are one of the folks that fellows will come to if they need support for marketing and branding and growth strategy. And we've had the pleasure of working with, I think, like a half dozen or almost a dozen fellows over the past few years, which has been really wonderful. Shauna became CEO in 2024 and brings an incredible background in social impact leadership. She's led transformations at some major organizations, including quadrupling Scratch Foundation's budget from $7 million to $30 million, and supporting the world's largest coding platform that serves 100 million children worldwide. Now, that's impact. Before that, she transformed Duke TIP. What does that stand for, Shauna? TIP?
TIP, Talent Identification Program. So gifted and talented program.
There you go. And that program serves 450,000 students annually and led MIT's engineering outreach programs as well. What's particularly exciting about having Shauna on the show and talking about Camelback is they just opened their applications for the 2026 fellowship. So we're proud to share that and announce that and hype that. And they're evolving their approach to meet entrepreneurs where they are in today's challenging funding environment. And it is a very challenging funding environment. We're feeling it. They're feeling it. It's crazy out there. So all that said, welcome to the pod, Shauna. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Let's jump in and like talk about the challenges that many of the fellows and entrepreneurs out there are facing. So when we talk about entrepreneurship and venture funding, most people think big Silicon Valley tech bros and getting their millions from VCs. But you're working in a different but sort of connected space. You're supporting entrepreneurs of color and women who are building social impact ventures. Help our listeners understand what this ecosystem looks and feels like and why it matters so much.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think why it matters is because we have to be in a space now where we are supporting entrepreneurs who are closest to their communities, build and innovate in their communities. But I don't like to always say solve problems, because we shouldn't be resigned to only solving problems. We should be able to innovate new ways of thinking and learning and doing for our own communities. And so part of the challenge is that our entrepreneurs often get less money upfront. So less early capital, and then less capital as they're building their ventures, less social capital for people who might be able to give them more financial resources. And then they're actually kind of expected to compete for market share with ventures who are getting quadruple or more of the resources. And we know that often Black founders in particular will start their ventures, whether it's nonprofit or for-profit, on $20,000 of credit card debt. And so they are in often cases like going into a deficit, trying to achieve a dream and support their own communities. And we also know that their ventures are more aligned with the needs of the community and have the most impact. To add to the numbers that you share, Paul, in addition to supporting over 200 founders in the last 10 years, those founders have turned our $9 million investment to over $365 million or more in follow-on funding, which makes it like one of the top accelerators in the world with those small, it seems small, $40,000 investment per founder. But for many of our founders, it's their first institutional check. It's their first larger kind of investment from an incubator that might give them $5,000 or $10,000. And for family members, it might be able to pull together some resources for them. It is something that we're excited about, but it's also something that needs more attention. In our last round of applications, we received over 500 applications for what we grew to 20 people that we selected.
Mm-hmm. And I'd be curious, I mean, we see and feel that as one of the partners working with you, you know, folks who are coming in have got great ideas and just need a little bit of, you know, support. And I love how y'all frame it. It's like capital, connections, and what's the other C?
Community, content, all the... Yeah.
And we try to help them with like marketing and branding strategy, and they're amazing, brilliant folks. And once you know, it's wonderful to see that unlock, and they're like, okay, this is how I need to spend my money, and you know, prioritize my thinking and my budgets and things like that. So it's great what you do. Would love to like paint the picture a bit more. Like, how has that landscape changed? You know, in terms of social impact entrepreneurship and diversity since you know Camelback was funded back in 2015. You're a new CEO in the role. Obviously, we know the larger political zeitgeist that's going on. Like, paint us the picture of you know how things have shifted, if you can.
Yeah, and what's happening right now. And I would say it really started about 2 years ago where we saw less dollars going into new ventures and sort of this shift away from the commitments that were made after the murder of George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movement to just sort of forgetting that our communities have been underinvested for centuries. And so what we are thinking about is how do we shift this transition, which we all have recognized, and turn it into an opportunity for innovation. I think that there is opportunity in chaos. I think there can be innovation in chaos. And that is what's happening right now. And even though it feels unnerving, you'll hear me say this often, that these systems that we are learned how to navigate around or navigate through were never built for communities of color and women and often. So there's an opportunity now for us to actually build something back more equitable and quickly, because if not, something else will be built that will be the same or worse. And so we are thinking about this as an opportunity as an organization. That's why we actually increased the number of fellows that we have supported in the last year so that we can actually give them that seed funding and they can actually go and build their ventures and hopefully continue to change the world. And I also think it's an opportunity for founders to be stronger operators and nimble. And very, you know, they have to be pretty frugal right now but you also have AI and technology in which you can build with much less capital than just even 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And so what I think about is that just being able to start a venture now, there are some advantages to that.
Absolutely. I mean, the we're going to get into the tech because like, we're a tech podcast, but like the equity implications for AI, I think are fascinating. I want to dig into that with you, but taking a step back and like, you know, your flagship program is the fellowship.
Yes.
You know, and it's more than just an investment program. You mentioned, you know, that you give, you know, 40K in capital, which is nothing to sneeze at. 5 years into running a business, I would think very differently about how I spent my first 40K than I did initially. So I feel you on that. But you also give executive coaching, access to what you call a mission-driven network. I would love you to walk our listeners through the typical fellowship experience. Like, what does it look and feel like for an entrepreneur? It's 16 weeks. Are we talking workshops, one-on-one mentoring, peer connections? Like, give us the walkthrough if you can.
Yeah, I love this question. I'm like, oh, I should have a fellow here with me. They will definitely tell you how it's changed their lives. But I think the most meaningful piece about our fellowship is that we start in person. We start with those connections and make sure people really know who each other are in their own community, in their own cohort. And we as a whole team, many of our team members come to be with them in their welcome week. And it's held in different places around the country. So I think that's the best. That's the first starting point. And then they go online and they will have various sessions. Like you said, you've come before and talked to our fellows around your expertise. And so from what does it mean to really fine tune your business plan? Our fellows already have a working MVP mostly. Like this is not, at this point when they come to Camelback, it's not back of the envelope. So we're looking for people with some proven concept of what they're testing and trying to improve on or build. And then we like, how do we tighten up your business plan? How do we help you with your elevator pitch? How do we help you understand hiring? So really, how do we move you from, in many cases, a self-proclaimed CEO to an operator of a business, right? And we have to do that pretty quickly because the vision that our founders have is what is going to always help them get the resources to be successful. In order for them to be successful from a sort of implementation perspective, especially right now, they have to be strong operators. What I love about that is we can teach that, right? Like we cannot teach you this this very specific expertise in a certain content area. But what we can do is ensure that you have the operational skills to run a business successfully. And with the advent of AI, your unique, the content you know is highly accessible to other people now. So what's the sort of the differentiating factor we're seeing, especially for the first year or two, is how strongly and effectively can you run your business?
I love that focus on like stronger operator. Like that's such a clear North Star for what the fellowship does, what you do, and where you want, you know, fellows to be at the end of the fellowship. Would love to dig into kind of both sides of that. Like how do you select the fellows? What kind of ventures are you looking for that maybe lend themselves to you know, being or becoming stronger operators? And also, are there any, and this is not a fair question, you can make you pick one of your favorite children, but like, you know, what are some of the standout success stories of you know, from the fellowship that you can share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first, I would say for our fellowship, again, we that cycle, we had over 500 applications and we ended up growing to going from 15 to 20 that we selected. That's less than 2%. So you do have to be resident in the United States and building and doing your work in the United States. So that's one thing. Our verticals include education. So that could be future of work, future of learning, literally new school models you might be building, as well as ed tech and some fintech and health tech. Most of our funding, we are a nonprofit ourselves, so most of our funding is coming from funders who are really passionate about the education that we are support, education ventures. And so that's what we really primarily focus on. And then in terms of who we select, when you think about less than 2%, it's hard to say here is like the rubric that will help you select. But I'll tell you what we're looking for. We're looking for passion. We're looking for uniqueness in the problem you're solving for, or what you're building, and that is innovative, right? Because there are amazing ventures and nonprofits and for-profit companies that are out there. They may not be a match for what we want to fund when it comes to new innovation in education and technology. And so that gets us down to a pool. And after your paper application, you'll go through an interview process if you become a finalist. And that's what we're able to match on with people who are in field, the field that you might be in, and helping like understand what are you really building? How can we be supportive? And also, how can we be supportive is a key. If you're too far along, you know, as much as we, I'm sure you would love the capital that we give, we really can't help you as much. And if you're too nascent, we also can't help you. So we're really looking for that sweet spot of a founder who has built something, has an MVP, a minimal viable product, and is looking at what comes after that.
Yeah, and I have to say, like, I've kudos to y'all, because I've been on like kind of the receiving end of that as like a, as a mentor, as a coach, and like have really seen the power and efficacy for which you've evolved your selection model and your support model. And you know, it's I feel like the fellows, you know, these days that they're leaning toward more towards that stronger operator, you know, side of things, and it really shows that you're taking you know, greater and greater care, and you're just supporting them better, you know, which is fantastic, and that's what you want to see out of a fellowship program. And yeah, it's just really nice to see. And I've been through a lot of fellowship programs, education programs, and some of them talk the game, but you all really walk the talk, as it were. So it's cool to see that as like someone who's a partner. So well done. Would love to talk about, like, you know, dig a little bit deeper into, you know, how you're evolving, because you're talking about, you know, fellows having to evolve to the market, and you all are doing that as well. So, you know, you've expanded your fellowship, you know, class. You've talked about evolving to meet fellows where they are in today's challenging economic climate. There's you know, ecosystem fatigue. There's shifting investor priorities. I want to understand how Camelback's adapting its approach. You know, it sounds like you've got some new programming on the offing that you know, you want to talk about. And also, I'm very curious about this capital collaborative program. Like, that is a bold initiative that I'd love you to explain to our listeners, because not many people are trying to change the funders, you know, and the funding game. So like, please dig into that and share with us.
Yeah, I think one, I want to highlight a couple of founders that might help give some color to the work that we do. And we have 200, so I'm just going to name a couple, but I'm not saying they're favorites for the record. But one that comes to mind is Jonathan Johnson. He's out of New Orleans, and with Rooted Academy or Rooted Schools, he basically is a charter school movement that he's built, but also he's done some really interesting work around giving cash payments to high school students and seeing how that helps them with achieving their academic goals, reducing their stress, and also supporting their families. So with just giving $50 a week to high school students, he can see that one, they're not just wasting the money. They use that money to help their families. And even at the end of the year, may have up to $300 that they actually have saved, as well as not having to take a job during the academic year and being able to focus on their academics. And we also think about Lisa Maria, who is in New Orleans too, and has a venture called Alas. It's really focusing on communities that are from the immigrant community, as well as what is their trajectory in education? How can they support their own community and help even educators and others who are in there supporting them understand what their needs are as a member of their own community? And then we even have many founders who are innovating in ed tech and fintech. We have Reducify with one of our founders, where she is focused on how do you use that 6 months before you have to pay your student loans to make payments, actually reduce your payments that are needed over the time and the length of your loan. So when I think about our founders, they're really being very specific about what problem they're solving for, and then making sure that their technology and their solution will actually lead to a better outcome for our communities. And so in addition to the follow-on funding that they are able to secure, we also have impacted 5 million lives around the country and world because of their approach to solutions.
I was just going to ask you to sign me up for Reducify because I need that student loan don't we all?
We have another one, David Henderson, who's building a technology to help you with how you loan money with integrity for the person who's asking for the loan and for the person giving the loan, no interest within families, and particularly families and friends. And it's something that we all do, and we often don't necessarily acknowledge this in some cases, the tension or shame that might go along with that. So really making that process easier for family members, especially at this moment in time.
Yeah, and I think
this idea of what's happening in the ecosystem, mm-hmm. our answer to that is doubling down and investing in our founders.
Mm. And I think expanding the fellowship program is an incredible, mark of your integrity and your investment. And hey, we can stretch a little bit. And when there's a time when folks need more, we're going to give more, and I think that's really powerful. So really good to hear that. Would love to. We're a growth, strategy partnership. We've worked with you all on changing your digital footprint so you can grow and speak to more fellows and funders. Would love to understand what's holding Camelback back from growth potentially. What are your biggest growth challenges in today's climate, and how are you looking to solve them? I know for a fact you've got an incredible team. Shout out to Tanya and Melvin and all those folks we worked with on the website. How are y'all tackling it?
Incredible team for sure. I mean, most nonprofit leaders will say capital is something that will hold them back. But I don't think that's the only thing you can name in a place where, more resources would be helpful. We are also being very strategic around how we build our team and reframe our team so that we can use folk who can help us, as you said, the expert bench we have. So instead of growing in FTEs, we're able to actually connect with people of specific expertise that our founders might need at specific moments in time. And so that helps us really have a broader span of reach and support without really ballooning our budget. I would say also what we need is more connections to founders who are building innovations, and particularly in the South. We're based out of New Orleans, and we really believe that we want to build not just, go into a community and select who we can support, but really build the ecosystem there so that we can cultivate entrepreneurship in that community. And so if you're selecting or doing work in New York, Boston, or California, San Francisco, there's so many entrepreneurs that are building. It's a different approach you can use. We know that 60% of people of color live in the South. And we want to be there really cultivating those ecosystems. So that's one thing I would say is how can we partner with other organizations to actually help cultivate more entrepreneurs building in education and in technology. I would also say mentorship. In addition to our expert bench, we're really thinking about in the new year, how can we start a mentor program like many other accelerators have? We have not done that yet for Camelback. So I think that's another opportunity for us.
I'll be your first volunteer. Happy to do it. I've loved every minute of the expert bench. And, besides being, a pipeline partner and sending work our way, it's just super interesting to see all these incredible fellows who are, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, have these amazing ideas and are on the verge of that success, and just give them a little nudge and help with some insights. That's it's been really, really rewarding. So Happy to help there. And also on the partnership side of things, yeah, I mean, would love to connect you. I'm sure you're probably all connected, but folks over at MDC, they've been a longtime partner of us, and Lakeisha also stepping into the CEO role. That's something we'll talk about. But I mean, two powerful leaders who are taking the mantle from the previous leader, in your case, from the founder, Aaron Walker. Would love to like hear a bit more about that transition and dig into your personal experience there. Like, that's a tough, you know, tough thing to do, to come in and say, hey, I want to balance and honor the organization's founding, but also put my own stamp on it. So love to, it seemed like from the outside, y'all did that with such integrity and intentionality and patience. You know, I think it was really important. So what was that like? How did you do it? How did you pull it off?
Well, this is a really good question. This is actually my second founder transition. And so I learned a lot from the first time. And I think it helped me with understanding a couple things that are really helpful. One is to build a strong relationship with the founder, with Aaron. Aaron is just such a wonderful person and had also was ready to move on to the next thing that he was doing, which was building the Ruthless for Good Fund. So he's VC now. And he still serves as an advisor to us, a senior advisor. We talk every 2 weeks. I bring my things, and he specifically works with me. He's been very thoughtful around just making sure he's stepping away from Camelback and giving me space to lead. Also, I think the board plays a critical role for me. Part of the reason I wanted to come to Camelback is because I felt the support from the interview process on with the board and an openness to honor what has been built by Aaron, but also a desire to see where Camelback could go next. So I think being as a leader, being able to have time to spend time with the board, which is not always easy when you also are a smaller nonprofit, but being more intentional around that. And then also with the team, like understanding how you toggle between meeting the team where they are and honoring like sort of the culture and the way in which work had been done. But then also understanding your leadership style and where you're going to go in the future. So it's not easy, but I'll say that's one thing that I've recognized is really important and have been able to become even clearer as a leader and acknowledge where Aaron and I might be very similar, and then also where we're different. And acknowledge also, like, I never worked at Camelback, so I actually don't know how things were when Aaron led the organization. So often, not often, but at times, sort of personally saying that to myself, but also sharing that with the team so that we know there is a gap in understanding with me as the CEO.
Yeah, I'd love to dig into a bit more about your personal experience. And I appreciate that. Look, as someone who's, I'm thinking about, you know, maybe stepping out of my role, and I'm like watching you all and trying to learn from it. And so I will definitely be calling you up at some point to, you know, Sean, I need some tips. How do I do this? How does this work? So get ready for that. But like, I would love to understand, what's the common thread that drives you? You've got this experience in education, you know, you taught high school science, you led programs at MIT, you're now supporting entrepreneurs at Camelback. Like, what's the through line for you?
Yeah. Well, it really is a passion for making young people, like ensuring that they have the opportunities and potential to grow to their full potential. And this comes from coming from Fayetteville, North Carolina, like a military town with two parents who are entrepreneurs. They still have their gymnastics business in Fayetteville, 36 years running, seeing what it was like for them to have to really make sacrifices. We had to make sacrifices as a family for that, but also recognizing that I had teachers and educators who literally tapped me on the shoulders and said, hey, I think you should do this. Or have you thought about this? You asked a lot of questions. I think this might be something for you. And so I want to continue to create those opportunities and steward them for the next generation of young people. Because if that doesn't happen, then where are we going to be, right? When you come from a place that is rich in culture and just like the best for me, love and care for my family and my community, but also not the same as when you grow up in a Boston or a New York or things like that. So I feel like we should have the same opportunities. And so I wake up literally, it seems cliche, but like wake up every day, like what can I do today to make the world better today and tomorrow? And so when I look back on my trajectory as in education and in social impact, it came from those decisions around like, I want to do what I love and enjoy. I mean, I went into GE right after Howard in less than a year, I realized corporate America in 1990, whatever, was not for me at all. And I took a pretty significant paycheck to just become a teacher quickly. Like, I quit my job. I want to become a teacher. I didn't know how to teach. I didn't have any background in that. But I knew that if I stayed on that corporate ladder, I wouldn't be able to get off. That was my fear, is I couldn't get off the ladder. And so I took that decision pretty early, which allowed me now to be in a very different space and excited about what I've done and less worried about how much money I made.
Yeah. You reminded me that I was grateful that I never dipped my toe into the corporate, like, and saw that money, because I maybe would have never left. I, you know, went right into teaching, and you know, I'm grateful I did. But also I found my way into the private sector eventually. And I like landing in a place where I can, you know, use like private sector thinking and strategy, marketing, branding, growth, and apply it to exactly what, you know, y'all are doing in terms of supporting entrepreneurs and their social impact. We almost exclusively work with, you know, social impact, you know, tech for good companies and you know, social entrepreneurs, as you know. So it's a nice like melding of the two, and I'm super grateful for that. And it seems like you've kind of, you know, had a similar trajectory where you're taking those business, you know, thinking and helping people become strong operators, because I think there is a kernel there of look, you have to know how to run an organization, run a business, support people, empower them if you want to achieve the kind of you know, game changing, you know, outcomes that you're looking for. So it's cool to see Camelback Fellows on that trajectory.
Yeah. And I want to also go back to one thing you talked about with succession planning that I think is really key, because often when you are stepping into a role after someone else, you don't know what you're going to step into, how primed is it for you to be successful. I have to give a huge kudos to Aaron, because one thing that really helps a nonprofit leader be successful is having a strong, financially stable organization. And he did that. He literally, when I came into the role, there was a 2-year runway, you know, in 2024.
That's unheard of.
That is unheard of. Exactly. Not 4 months, not 2 months, 2-year runway that stayed. I mean, we got substantial investment like many people did in the last couple of years. And Aaron was very intentional around not spending all those resources. Yeah. And so that's how we've been able to make a decision now when it's needed to invest more in founders.
I was going to say it takes discipline to, you know, kind of you have to, like, the strategy is about saying no to a lot of things. And when you have folks coming to you who, you know, they have incredible need, and to have that discipline to say, look, like, I recognize there's a need here, but I need to think about the long term. I need to think about not just the 2021 fellows, but the 2026 fellows. You know what I mean? And now when the game has changed, that decision that he made is looking real, real smart, right? Because now, you know, the economic climate is what it is and the political climate is what it is, and you can and need to invest more. You know, those chickens are coming home to roost in a good way, right? Like it's really nice to see that. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Would love to dig into, like, get back to the tech piece, jumping back a little bit. I've always been fascinated by seeing, like, some ventures come through Camelback that are very tech focused, and some are very like boots on the ground, we're people to people, and some are a mix of the two. So we talked about AI and the equity potential implications for AI, and how it can help folks scale. How does Camelback think about tech? How does it think about AI? Like, when it's selecting its fellows, when it's supporting them, how is tech integrated across, you know, your stack? Into this, looking, you know, working with you on your website, but want to understand how you're thinking about it at the leadership level.
Yeah. Well, first, we want to change the face of who we believe can build tech. Just name that, right? So when I see innovators in AI, I don't see lots of different kinds of people that get put on a magazine cover. And I think that is not a true indication of who actually is building in AI. We've been investing in AI ventures since 2018, from those who might use it to, like, sort of deploy their in technology to those who, like, it's centered on AI. And so I see it as a way for us to not just have it where we have one type of person who's being identified as building in that way. But now when you look at our fellows, you'll see folk who are using AI to identify ways for young people to have support, whether that's support from counseling or support in other ways, or building platforms to help with financial management, financial education. So we think of AI as a tool. More than anything, we are wanting to build a fund, a philanthropic fund that will help us do more initial investment for founders, because what we find right now is founders don't have the financial resources to continue to build. They're not getting the large scale grants. And so we want to be able to help them get to MVP and beyond. But technology, for me, I think, one, what's the impact on the community that you're serving? What's innovative about how you're using the technology? And how can we be builders instead of consumers of this technology? So broadly, that's how I would say we approach our sort of, we used to call it conscious tech, but now we see it across all of our whole platform. We're not just saying separately out, as for instance, if you're building an ed tech tool, there's education and technology. We want to recognize both sides of what you're building. And so it's an evergreen space for us. We have not sort of called it out. If you look at our website, we're not like AI for good or AI only, right. And that's intentional. But actually, if you looked at the ventures we've been funding since 2018, you'll see that we've been funding them.
Interesting. And is there, because of the funding environment being the way it is, and maybe even the political environment too, is there a bigger push to get your ventures to be revenue bearing and profitable and sort of running on their own, you know, sales and revenue more than before because the grants aren't coming in and the philanthropic dollars aren't flowing as much?
Yeah. Well, I would say regardless of your nonprofit or for profit, you want to have, if you're only depending on philanthropy, that's going to be hard. And maybe even venture, that's going to be hard. You're going to have some way in which you are securing resource or earned revenue is something we're seeing more of. We actually, in our last cycle, saw more for-profit organizations apply to our fellowship than we have in the past. And also seeing nonprofits that have earned revenue, even as a nonprofit. And so I do think it's hard to be new and thinking that it's all going to be philanthropy without some kind of starting point or runway. So we are looking for that. We're looking for viable models financially. It can be still for-profit and nonprofit, but that's what we would be looking for. How can you think about whether it's, and contracts are hard, even if they're at the federal level for sure, state level and local level, but we are seeing nonprofits have viable models where they are looking at philanthropy, looking at maybe corporate, earned revenue, so providing a service so they can go straight to consumer. And then some of them are looking at some contracting from states and local governments. And at a federal level, it's been very challenging for our fellows. Our new schools, some of them have already had federal funding for charter schools. The funding just went away even after it had already been confirmed. And so it is a challenging moment for that. But I also think it's an opportunity for innovation because what can you build now in a very nimble way that actually will help you have a longer runway, not just for now, but when you do have more cash.
Yeah. I mean, amen. I mean, I started our agency in the middle of the pandemic. But like, even in that, like, I came up in kind of the education nonprofit sector, and I wish I had like a Camelback curriculum that taught me to be a strong operator and to build viable models. I'm just turned 40. You know, I started the agency at 35, and I'm like, scratching my head, like, how am I still learning some of these basic business practices that I wish someone taught me in school or in a fellowship program like Camelback Ventures? But it's great that you're delivering it, you know, to folks who are, they've got the idea, they've got the seed, and they're getting that just-in-time, you know, learning to kind of be strong operators who are running viable models, which I think is a great frame. So yeah, thank you for what you're doing there.
Yeah, thank you. And we talked a little bit about, you brought up Capital Collaborative. Yeah. I do want to share that Capital Collaborative, we've transitioned it, so it's sort of sunset. And now we're literally focusing on philanthropy, leaders in philanthropy that are already committed to the work. They know that we need to move more dollars to Black and Brown and women founders. And how can we actually create a collective that will do that work with fidelity? And so Capital Collaborative was focused on white leaders in foundations, that could be the CEO, that could be the program officer. And we did a lot of good work to help shift mindsets and also move more dollars to Black and Brown founders. And now we really want to do this work with people who understand the need. Like, here's what we want to do. Right. I don't want to do it in isolation. I need a whole crew, a posse of people who I can learn from, who are going to do this work now when it matters most than when it was, you know, a few years ago. And so we are building on that with our Guardian Summit that we offer. We have as a conference every year. We had a funder convening there. We're going to be convening again in September in Chicago. And really every quarter having time, we're bringing this group together and build a coalition so that we can do a couple things. We want to support about 10,000 founders over the time of like sort of 5 years versus 200 or 300. We also want to, and that doesn't mean through our fellowships. Like, how can we actually, like you said, share content, share learnings, key learnings, have our thought leadership be a lead in that. And then also we want to build out more capacity to have an AI fund with a philanthropic AI fund, because this will allow us to invest in nonprofits and for-profits, as well as be able to give support for founders who are building an AI.
Cool. And thank you for that update. I think it's I respect the integrity in saying, hey, you know, this way that we've structured this program could be improved or needs to be shifted, and we're going to pivot. And that's okay. You know what I mean? And I think that's I think what you're doing speaks to the moment that we're in and the particular need and how it's shifted. So kudos for that flexibility on that pivot. Want to move us into the quickfire round, lightning round. This is just like fun, sort of interesting, somewhat silly questions to get the audience to know you a little bit better. The first one I'm going to tweak a little bit, but basically, you know, you're a leader of an organization. So if you could found and start another organization, maybe it's a tech startup, maybe it's a nonprofit, what would it be and why?
Yeah, I got this one. Definitely want to have a space for like talent development. So ways in which we can help young people, you know where they can go to get all the resources they need at one shop and then help them along their full journey.
Yeah, that's a great one. And we should talk, Shauna, because we're thinking about starting a little talent vertical, because I think the AI thing is obviously going to put downward pressure on the talent market. And it's going to make, you know, the skills and habits and ways of working that folks, you know, who remain in the market have even more important. So let's table that and talk about talent at some point, because I think it's a juicy area. The second question, what tech invention right now makes you the most excited and why?
I get excited about the technology where you can basically frame your whole business plan and know from the start to finish. Not that you say, I'm going to take it and run with it. It still has some ideation in it that you have to check. But, you know, that would take us
long time,
at least 6 months of intentional work and research. And now you can put that into different technologies that will spit it out for you in a way that helps you spend your time in a different way, like move with fidelity quicker. So I get excited about that, especially in the work that we do.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I feel like, you know, I mean, I'll speak for myself, but like my sort of older millennial generation, like I feel like we're almost a little bit numb to the pace of change because we've experienced it so acutely. And like some of the stuff I'm doing with generative AI, I'm like, I should be blown away at the stuff that I'm doing on Claude or, you know, ChatGPT. But I'm kind of like, okay, you know, what's next? Like, you know, like it's actually astounding. So it's interesting to think about that from a generational
lens. You're right. Because I will say, like, in using Claude and other ones that help you with writing, sometimes they're very helpful. Sometimes it takes you more time.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So, like, that I've become more – I've learned already how to use it when it's more effective than all the time. But this piece around putting your idea in that you have and then it actually spitting out a pretty robust not just a business plan, but taking you all the way through what an MVP looks like is pretty astounding.
Yeah, we should be more impressed, I guess. But flip side of that question, what's the tech invention right now that makes you concerned or worried?
Yeah, my daughter and I were actually just looking on Instagram and she was showing me these profiles of like AI people. That's
avatars, yeah, avatar.
Not
okay.
The fact that they have more followers than me, by the way. But anyway, like literally life story like these. And I'm just like, so now we're having, you know, profiles intentional that are not real people, but they have the stories, the videos, the full families and multiple sites. And I just, that gave me a lot of concern. I just saw that this week. I'm just like, well, I mean, the platform that has all that on it is very concerning to me.
Yeah, we had a guy on the podcast who ran an AI candidate for like basically like what would be a congressional office in the States, but sort of like a, you know, a district level office here in the UK. And it was fascinating to kind of see and what are the regulations or the rules governing that? Like, could it actually happen? What would happen if that AI entity got elected? Like just all types of really fascinating, it's fascinating stuff. Flip side of that. So let's talk about a literal human. Who is a literal human, small L, small H, who's been integral to your career journey that you want to shout out?
Family. I got to talk about my mom and dad. They are entrepreneurs from Fayetteville, North Carolina, built their own gymnastics business, learned so much from them. And then, of course, my daughter, who is going into her second year of college, and just seeing her grow has really given me lots of joy.
That's amazing. Yeah. And I can relate to that. Both my parents were entrepreneurs, small business owners as well. And that I'm so grateful to have grown up in that, you know, and that swam in that water, as it were. So yeah, I can relate to that. What's an inspirational quote or saying that stuck with you through your journey in, you know, philanthropy and education? You've kind of dipped into tech a little bit through the ventures you support. Yeah. What's one that stuck out?
You know, for a person who moves a lot and like all these things I want to get done, I really appreciated a quote that I saw coming into Camelback, which is, be where your feet are. be present, you know? Yeah. And that is something that's helped me, particularly now with so many things going on, is to, as much as I can, pause, take a beat, and particularly with family and friends, or even my team, like, how are you today?
Yeah.
How's it, the work is going to get done.
Yeah.
But every day is not guaranteed. So we're here today, and how can we make it better?
It's so easy, I think, as a leader, too, to be focused on tomorrow and the next funding cycle and the next meeting and not, you know, be where your feet are. So I think that's a really great one to wrap up on. Been a fantastic conversation. Thank you, listeners, for listening. We've had Shauna, who's the CEO of Camelback Ventures, join us today. And what I love about Camelback is it represents something incredibly powerful. This idea that, you know, we get better solutions and more equitable outcomes when we invest in diverse entrepreneurs who really understand their community's challenges. They're the closest to those challenges, and the people, you know, closest to the problem are often closest to the solution. I think, you know, your work, you know, honors that idea. And it's not just about funding startups. It's about reshaping who gets to be an entrepreneur and what problems are prioritized as a result. So I want to thank you for joining the pod today, Shauna.
Thank you so much. Good to see you again, Paul.
Good to see you. Where can our listeners find out more about Camelback Ventures and sign up for the fellowship, apply for the fellowship?
Yes.
Yeah. Tell them where on the interwebs to find you.
Yes. Yes. Please go to camelbackventures.org. Our fellowship application is open now through September 10th, I believe. So please check us out and apply if you're interested in sponsoring, supporting Camelback, or becoming engaged more. Please go to the website also. We love to have you be part of the Camelback family. Like you are, Paul.
Nice. Yeah, no, thank you. It's been wonderful to be part of the Camelback fam for the past couple of years. We absolutely love working with y'all and the amazing work your fellows are doing. So please, 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 everybody, share the link, you know, tell your friends and family about the fellowship. And if you can, give us a review, give us a rating so we can keep bringing amazing guests like Shauna Young, CEO of Camelback Ventures, onto Tech Can't Save Us. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And thank you again, Shauna, for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.